Morning, everyone. Today is the daf in Masechta Shabbos, daf Kuf Chaf Ches, 128. We're on Kuf Chaf Zayin and Beis, and today, as we begin the, as we continue the Gemara from yesterday, we started the 17th parak of Shabbos yesterday. Sorry, the 18th parak of Shabbos yesterday, and we're still on the topic of Mupsa. But there has been a shift, a significant shift from the 17th to the 18th parak of Shabbos. In the 17th parak of Shabbos, we talked about Mupsa's Kalim. Utensil that are generally used for the purposes of Isser or Muksa. I mean, to be honest, utensils that are used for the purposes of Heter, to a certain degree, also are Muksa, meaning its usage on Shabbos becomes limited. I mean, not very limited. In fact, for most every reason, you're allowed to move it. Tzarech Gufo, Tzarech Mekomo, Mechamel Etzel, that's the Klish Machto Laheter. And Klish Machto Lister, you're a little more limited in terms of what you could do with it. You can move it Tzarech Mekomo, you can move it Tzarech Gufo, you can't move it Mechamel Etzel. But now, as we move into the 18th Perek of Shabbos, so we're not talking about Kalim anymore, we're talking about non-Kalim. Eitzim Avanim, wood, stones, and even food. Right, organic materials, things that are not made into a kli, and those things are also going to be muksa on Shabbos. Now, note, however, that they're different. Meaning, it's not a kli shemalachta le'iser. It's what we would call in halacha muksa machmas gufo. Meaning, they're just organic materials, and therefore they're muksa. Once I got to this understanding of the basic difference between kalim and non-kalim, so then it answers the question which really I struggled with yesterday, as you probably figured out, and that is that we had the first case in the Mishnah, where the Mishnah says that here I have a storehouse which is filled with food, and the Mishnah says, at least according to Rav Chista's understanding of the Mishnah, you can't move it. You can't move it on Shabbos, even though guests are coming and I need the room, even though people want to learn, I need the room, I can't move it. So a number of you asked me yesterday, well, why can't you move it? Tzarech Mekomo, I need the space. Aren't you allowed to move a kli shemalachto le'iser for the purpose of Tzarech Mekomo? So why not move this as well? So that's the question that was posed to me yesterday. I really struggled. I spoke to Rebbe yesterday, and now I have a much better understanding, meaning that we're no longer discussing kalim now. We are discussing organic materials, things that are unprocessed, wood and food, and so these things are muksa, but not kalim. It's what we would call mamish muksa, meaning, and it doesn't have a category, it doesn't fit into a neat category of klisha malachta lis or klisha malachta laheter. It's just simply muksa. And under no circumstances, you can't move it. You can't move it tzarech mekomo, you can't move it tzarech gufo, you simply cannot move it on Shabbos. So that really makes it, first of all, it explains why now it's a separate perek, meaning it's not, even though it's a continuation of muksa, but it's now a separate perek, because it's now a separate topic. It's a subtopic within muksa. It's not muksa's kalim, which was the 17th perek. It's muksa's eitzim v'avanim and any type of unprocessed organic material. Good. According to the two interpretations of the Mishnah, Rav Chista and Shmuel. So you're right according to Shmuel. Shmuel did allow you to move it. But according to Rav Chista, you can't. And the only way you can, according to Rav Chista, is if I started taking it before Shabbos, which means that I took the muksa status off of it. Then and only then I'm allowed to move it. But, according to Rav Chista, our Mishnah is going like Rav Yehuda, and if I didn't start before Shabbos, I cannot do it on Shabbos itself. Okay, that's just an overview of the 18th Perek, which, Baruch Hashem, I have a better understanding. Not a great one, but a better understanding. And then yesterday's daf was really just super interesting. Two big topics came up in yesterday's daf, Hachnasas Orachim, because the Mishnah says that one of the reasons why you'd be allowed to move it is for hospitality. People are coming over. So the Gemara yesterday talked about the importance of Hachnasas Orachim. That was Kuf Chav Zayin Amud Aleph. And then Kuf Chav Zayin Amud Beis talked about the mitzvah, you want to call it a mitzvah, whatever. Whatever you want to call it, but the inyan of being dan l'kaf tzchus. And when you see people doing things which seem inappropriate, so your job as a good Jew is to assume the best and not to assume the worst. I know we're cynical people, and that makes this mitzvah of dan l'kaf tzchus a very difficult mitzvah because we are cynical. But that's exactly what we have to combat. We have to fight our cynicism, and we have to look at people, and we have to see the good in people and not the bad in people. And even though they're doing something which is questionable, nevertheless, you should assume that what they're doing is the correct thing. Okay. And then, of course, I'm always reminded, one of my rebbeim back in YU told me, there's also a mitzvah not to be stupid. So the two have to be, you know, balanced. So, okay. There are two stories. The Gemara told three stories yesterday. Two of those stories are found in Avos Rabbi Nassan. Avos Rabbi Nassan, you'll find that Masechta in the back of Avodah Zarah. We don't do in the Daf Yomi. We don't even do Avos in the Daf Yomi for reasons which still elude me in terms of why some Masechta is yes and why no. Whatever the reason is, now's not the time. But there are two stories that are told over in Avos Rabbi Nassan in the eighth parak of Avos Rabbi Nassan. I looked it up yesterday and. The stories over there are a little more embellished than how we have it over here, but the point is that two important stories in terms of this idea of being dan lekaf zchus, of judging others favorably. So one of the stories we went over yesterday, and we are now starting the second story today, and so we are in Kuf Chaf Zayin Amud Beis, and we're about halfway down on the Amud, and we are in story number two. Okay, so I see story number one. Where does story number two begin? Here it is. Tana Rabbanan. I got it. Okay, it's... how are you going to find it? It's two-thirds down the page. The first word in the Amud is Ve'atem. Okay, and we're on story number two. Pam Achas, there was once upon a time, Pam Achas, Hutzruch Tavarech, Tamid Chachamim, Eitzel Machunusi, Achas. So there was a certain matron, okay, a woman of very significant importance, Shekol Gadol Roman Musin Esla, and all the great Roman diplomats and senators were by her. So if you have not figured out her profession by this point in time, so you're going to, without trying to be judging, you're a little slow on the, correct. Amru mi yelech. So now, but they needed her. In other words, for whatever reason, the Gemara doesn't give us much detail in terms of the story, but the Jewish people needed her and they need to send somebody to her. But now you're basically talking about someone going into a brothel, which obviously is extraordinarily inappropriate, but they need to speak to her for whatever political reason. So Amalam Rav Yeshua Ani Elech. So Rav Yeshua says, okay. So he volunteered to go. Halach Rav Yeshua V'Tamidav came and she gila Pesach Beisa. So now Rav Yeshua goes, and Rav Yeshua is flanked by his Talmidim. But as he gets to the doorway of the house of the matron, so he says to his Talmidim, okay, Adkan. In other words, you stop. I continue on my own. Chalat Tfilav Barachok Arbamas. Now he takes off his tefillin. V'nichnas V'nal Hadas, and he goes inside, and the door's locked. Bifneim, Acha Shiyatza Yared V'Tavol, and then he comes out and he tovels in the mikvah. Vishanal Talmidav, and he teaches the students. Now, I didn't make this point yesterday. Let me make the point just very quickly today, because, you know, I have all the time in the world now. But make the point right now, and that is, why did he tovel in the mikvah? Well, I mean, you know what was suspected, but just so that everyone understand that there was a Takanas Ezra, which is the Gemara in Brachos, Daf Chaf Alef, Daf Chaf Beis, Takanas Ezra is such that if you want to teach Torah and learn Torah, and you're a Baal Keri, the man's a Baal Keri, so he has to tovel in the mikvah. He cannot learn Torah, and he can't daven. Question of whether davening was part of the original Takana, but he cannot learn Torah, he cannot daven until he tovels in the mikvah. And we're just talking about a regular Baal Keri. So now, when he tovels in the mikvah in order to teach his students Torah, so that presumes that, of course, he's a Baal Keri. Well, if he was a Baal Keri, so how did he become a Baal Keri after going into the house of the Matronusa and then coming out? So one can only imagine, in other words, if you put two and two together, one can only imagine how he became a Baal Keri. The Amar Lam Bishasha Chalati Tfil Mamechash Dani. So now he turns to his students and he says, okay, test. Now it's time for the test. What did you think when I took off my tefillin? So Amar Nukasab Rebbe Lo Yichnusa Devei Kedusha B'Makom Tuma. Okay, so they gave what will become the correct answer. And that is, you're going into the house of a brothel. And to wear your tefillin to such a place, that's a makom tuma, and it's just not simply, it's inappropriate to wear your tefillin in such a place. That's it. That's what we assume. Bishashanati b'mechashdani. Now when I close the door, so what were you thinking then? Amar Shema Dava Machus Yesh Beino Levena. Well, obviously, this woman is a woman of importance. You are also a significant individual, so... In other words, you had a very diplomatic meeting, and the privacy engendered even more diplomacy. Now, I came out and I told them the mikvah. So, what did you think then? So, they said, look, probably what happened is over the course of the conversation, some of her spit landed on your clothing. Over the Avodah Zarah, for that matter, I didn't have to say it that way. In other words, there's a gzera, the Rabbanu, we learned about in Masechta Nida, that a non-Jewish woman has the status of a zava, and so therefore we know that the mayanos zava, that the body secretions of a zava, specifically here in this case, the spit of a zava, has the same status of the zava. So if her spit lands on his clothing, that means he becomes tamei. So he told him the mikvah because he was tamei. Tumah midrabbana, but tamei nevertheless. So yesh beinu, I'm sorry. Amar lahem avodah kachaya. And now, to all the questions that he asked, and to all the answers that they gave, so Rav Yehoshua says, you're correct. You're absolutely correct. And more importantly, not only are you correct, but you perform the mitzvah of dan lekav zchus, meaning you judge me favorably. Even though you could have arrived at another conclusion, you could have easily arrived at another conclusion, but you judge me favorably, and for that he was very grateful. And so, and he gives him a bracha, just like you judge me favorably, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should judge you favorably as well. Okay, end of the second story as told in Avos to Rabbi Nassan. And by the way, there was another story that we saw yesterday, three stories in total, in terms of the mitzvah of being dan lekaf zechus. Okay, we move on now in the Gemara, and we are going back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says it depends what's in the storehouse, meaning, even if you have a license to move things around in the storehouse, according to Rav Chista, that means that you started moving it before Shabbos. According to Shmuel, that means even on Shabbos itself. But once you have license to move things in the storehouse, you still have to ask another question, what's the food in the storehouse? Because if the food is not edible, it's mukzah, and you cannot move it. So what are things that are considered inedible? So the Mishnah gives examples of things that are both halachically inedible and also physically inedible. So the Mishnah gave a whole series of examples, and what we're going to do now in the Gemara is we're going to go through each example step by step, one by one. Each one of them present its own novelty in terms of what it teaches us. And so let's go into the Gemara inside. We start off with Truma Tahara. So Truma Tahara said, the Gemara says, you can move. The Mishnah said, you can move Truma Tahara. To which the Gemara now is about to say, don't we know that? Meaning, if it's Truma and it's edible and it's Tahara, so it's Pshita, it's obvious. The Gemara says, L'tzricha d'man chabiyad Yisrael. The Gemara says, well, yeah, but it was placed there by Yisrael, who was not allowed to eat it. I might have thought Zahavamina, since the Yisrael is not allowed to eat the truma, so for him, because personally for him it's Aser, I might have thought it should be Mokzah. And the answer the Gemara says is, you're right, of course it's Aser to the Yisrael, but it's Mutter to the Kohen. It's not objective Isser. It's only Aser to one segment of the Jewish people. True, only the majority of the Jewish people, but since it's Mutter to the Kohen, so we will not call it Mukza. Next, Demai. Now, Demai, as I explained yesterday, anything I purchased from an Am Haaretz, all produce purchased from an Am Haaretz, there is a concern that he did not take off Shumas Maisos. The Am Haaretz is not careful about his observance of mitzvos, and so therefore, when I buy any produce from an Am Haaretz in Israel, so I need to take off Trumas Maestros, but as a chumra midrabban, as a rabbinic stringency, meaning the rabbis are fully aware that a lot of them do. In fact, the Gemara says a number of times, most of them do, but because of those that don't, so therefore the rabbis impose a stringency, it's a chumra that I have to take off Trumas Maestros. Okay. Now, demai halochazile. Now, okay, when all said and done, you're not allowed to eat demai until you take off Trumas Maestros. So why does the Mishnah say that if your storehouse is filled with demai, so you're allowed to clear the storehouse? You shouldn't be allowed to. It's food that's not allowed, you're not allowed to eat. So came and he buy mafkalen lanachse v'haviyani v'chazilei hashanami chazilei. So the Gemara says, look, as I explained just a moment ago, most of the Amei Ha'aretz take off Trumas Maestros. So that means that really, if I ask the question, can I assume the Trumas Maestros were taken off? Well, let's go with our general concepts of halacha. Most of them do. That's called rov. Now, in general, in halacha, Rove determines what the reality is. Rove tells us that probably Trumas and Maestros have taken off. The fact that the rabbis required me to take off Trumas and Maestros, I've said it already before, but I'll say it again, it's a chumrah, it's a stringency of the rabbis. But the rabbis recognize that it's a chumrah, and under certain circumstances, they relaxed the chumrah. Here's an example. A poor person is allowed to eat demai without having to take off Trumas and Maestros. A achsanai, a guest also is allowed to eat demai because he's traveling. He's assumed to a certain degree, he's assumed to be poor. So the Gemara says, what you can do theoretically is give up all your possessions, become poor, and then you'd be allowed to eat the demai. Now, the Gemara doesn't actually mean that this is what you're supposed to do. It just simply means that what you see here is at least potentially you could eat it. So therefore, it's not Isser. It's not. We're not going to call it a chefta shell Isser. Did not, the Gemara quotes a Mishnah. Machilas anim demai v'sachsanya demai. V'am Rav Huna Tana. Now Rav Huna quotes a Braisa, which is going to basically tell us the same thing. Just record a machlokas between Beisham and Beisila. Beisham omrim ein machilas anim demai v'sachsanya demai. Beisila omrim machilas anim demai v'sachsanya demai. So we now know it's a machlokas between Beisham and Beisila. And what's the point of us knowing that? Meaning Beisham and Bamakom Beisila ain't no Mishnah. So the basic approach of Rashi, it's not Rashi over here. I think it's Rashi in Brachos. Okay, I could double check. Either way, but the point is now is that anytime you come across a brisa that says that the ani is not allowed to eat demai, I now know that mishnah is going like Beis Shammai, not like Beis Hillel. But the accepted halacha, of course, is like Beis Hillel, and ani is allowed to eat demai, and so therefore, again, it points to the basic idea that demai is not a chefza shel iser. Okay, now we get to the complicated part of today's daf, and it's not super complicated, but a little complicated. And let's go over the sequence of Trumas and Maisers. We've gone over this a number of times, but you got to know. When you bring in the produce, grapes, olives, and wheat, and could be that it applies to all fruit, and it could be that vegetables are chayim midrabanan. Okay, whatever. Okay, the first thing you need to do is take off Truma Gadol. That's 2% that goes to the Kohen. Okay, then you give Maaser Rishon, which is 10% over to the Levi. Then what the Levi does in turn is he has to take 10% of the 10% that was given to him, and he gives that to the Kohen. The first Truma that you gave the owner of the field to the Kohen, that's called Truma Gadolah. The 10% you give to the Levi, that's called Maaser Rishon. The 10% that he in turn has to give now to the Kohen, that we're going to call Trumas Maaser. Okay, and there's more, but for now, that's what we need to know. And I gave it in the proper sequence as well. First Truma Gadolah, then Maaser Rishon, then Trumas Maaser. Okay, now follow. Now the Aron Mishnah says that if the Levi has Maaser Rishon and he gives his Trumas Maaser over to a Kohen, so now the Maaser Rishon is totally misukan. It's fixed, it's now mutter to eat by the Levi. And so therefore, if the storehouse is filled with Maaser Rishon, where the Trumas Maaser has been taken off, so now you're allowed to move all that Maaser Rishon. To which the Gemara's response to all this is just one simple question. Pshita. It's obvious. Meaning, he did exactly what he was supposed to do. Why would I have thought otherwise? To which the Gemara answers, L'tzricha sheikdimu b'shibolim, v'nidla himenu Trumas Maaser, v'lo nidla himenu Truma Gadola. So the Gemara says, here's what happened, and here it gets a little bit complicated. We know that produce, when exactly do you have to take off Trumas and Maaseros? So that is when it's processed. Prior to its being processed, meaning grain out in the field, grapes on the vine, olives on the tree, are not yet obligated in Trumas and Maaseros. You could walk over to an olive tree, assuming it's not Arla, pick off one olive, and eat it. Oh, you didn't take off Trumas and Maaseros? There's no obligation yet to take off Trumas and Maaseros. Oh, Trumas and Maaseros is only obligated upon the processing. What exactly is processing mean? So the Gemara is going to use a couple words to describe processing. One word you're going to see in the Gemara is kri, the pile. In other words, when you make a pile, in other words, harvesting, gathering, making a pile. Another word you're going to see in the Gemara is digun. Same basic idea. In other words, I take the grains, I bring you the grains inside the house, and I make a pile of the grains. That is now the processing of it. It's now considered nidgan, processed. And now, and only now, is it obligated in Trumas and Maaseros. Now what the Gemara here describes is the following scenario. Out in the field, what the owner of the field did is he gave Maaser Rishon first. Now there's not even yet an obligation of Trumas and Maaseros, but he took off Maaser Rishon out in the fields. And he gave it now to the Levi. Now, obviously, he shouldn't have done that. First and foremost, he shouldn't have done that. I mean, the Torah gives a very simple and clear sequence of how it should be done. And so that's number one. Let's say very clearly, that's not what's supposed to happen. Okay, but beyond that, now that he took off Maaser Rishon and he gave it to the Levi, so let's just think about it, what happened from the perspective of the Kohen. The Kohen got gypped. because what should have happened is Truma Gedolah should have been taken off. Now, I know it's only 2%, but 2% is a percentage. In other words, if it's a lot, that means that the Kohen now just lost his 2%. So now the question becomes the following question. The Levi, now we all know that he's going to take 10% and give it to the Kohen because his obligation is to take Trumas Maaser off the Maaser Rishon. But does he, in addition to that, also have to take off Truma Gedolah as well? Does he also have to set aside 2%, which the Baal HaBayis did not take off? Interestingly enough, the answer is he doesn't have to. He does not have to. So, and how do I know that? The Gemara is now going to cite a source for this. V'chi ha'damer Rabbi Abba, Amar Shlakish, Maaser Rishon, shehigdimu b'shibalim, pater mitruma gedola. So if the Baal HaBayis did this, which again, he shouldn't have, but if he did this, so then there's going to be an exemption from the Levi to give truma gedola over to the Kohen. Now, is the Kohen going to lose out a little bit? The answer, of course, is yes. Because of 10% of the produce now, the Kohen is not getting 2% of the 10%. I know that represents a small amount, but again, that's a percentage that the Kohen's not getting. Shenamar, very mostly, me menu chumas Hashem, meiser mena meiser. Meiser mena meiser, amar talach velo chumas gedolah v'chumas meiser mena meiser. If in the event, in the bizarre event, where the Levi got his Maaser Rishon and has both obligations standing to give the Kohen not only the Trumas Maaser but the Truma Gedolah, so we learned out based on a Pasuk, he only has to give the Kohen Trumas Maaser, not Truma Gedolah. Now I know I spoke very fast and I know I went through that very quickly, but that's why, you know, you could listen to it later on again today. And then when you're listening to it later on again, you're going to hear the instructions of listen to it again, and then you're going to replay it again, and eventually it's going to sink in. Look, it sank in with me. So if it sinks in with me, it can sink in with others as well. He shouldn't have done it, but he did it. Now the Gemara says, let me ask you a question. Would this work if he did this after processing? He meaning the Baal HaBayis. If the Baal HaBayis took off if he gave the Levi's Maaser Rishon first without giving Truma Gedolah after processing, does it work then? Meaning, does the Levi only have to give Trumas Maaser? And can he forego giving the Truma Gedolah? To that, the Gemara says, no. Amalei alacha amakra, mikol matnosechem tarimu. You must give off all Truma. Meaning, you're not allowed to skip any of the Truma. So in other words, even though the Levi gave Trumas Maaser, but he also has to give Truma Gedolah as well. So the Gemara says, just one second. The Gemara says, umar reisa. So now, we really have conflicting psukim. One pasuk gives us a sense that all the Levi has to do is give off Trumas Maaser, and that's it. And even if there was a Truma Gedolah that needed to be given off, he doesn't have to. And we have another pasuk that says, Mikol Matnoseichem, that he has to give off all Truma to the Kohen. So the Gemara says, Ha'idgan v'haylo idgan. So the Gemara says, all the difference in the world is processing. If the grain has been processed, which now means that there's a chova of Trumas and Maisers, so now the Baal HaBayis can't just simply ignore it, meaning there is now an obligation of Trumas Maaseros. So even though he gave the Levi his Maaser Rishon first, which he shouldn't have done, the Levi cannot say, okay, I'm only going to give off Trumas Maaser. I'll give off 10%, but I'm not going to give off an additional 2%. Why should I have to do that? Just because of the Baal HaBayis? And the answer is, no, he has to do it. He has to take off both Trumas Maaser and Truma Gedolah. And by the way, probably in the other order. Meaning he has to take off Truma Gedolah, and then he has to take off Trumas Maaser. Once there's an obligation on the grain, once it was nidgan, so now there's an obligation of Hafrashas Trumas Maaseros, and he cannot ignore the Truma Gedolah.
In terms of the obligation to give to Truma, it usually has to be when he brings them under his roof in his house, right? Mm-hmm. The question is, does his storage count as his roof?
Well, no, the obligation, let's do it this way. The obligation doesn't really start with the Levi, it starts with the owner of the house, the Baal HaBayis.
I'm saying, the owner of the house, his obligation begins when he's collected the stuff into his house.
Correct.
Does the storage count as his house, or is it a separate...
I assume it counts. I assume so. Okay, yes?
How would I know? I'm a Levi, I receive 10%, how would I know?
So if you don't know, you assume that the owner did the right thing. If you do know, so then you got to take off Truma Gedolah. Okay, Maaser Sheni Pshita L'Tzricha Shenasan Eskerem L'Nasan Eschamish. Now, when you redeem Maaser Sheni, so you have to redeem the owner. If the owner redeems Maaser Sheni, so he has to both pay the principal value of the food that he's redeeming, removing the Kedushas Maaser Sheni off the food, and he's got to add on another 25%. How does a fifth become 25%? Okay, if you've been with me long enough, you know. And not for now. I will not explain now. But the point being as follows. The Mishnah is making the following chiddush. Even though I redeem my Maaser Sheni, and I did pay its principal amount, the Keren, but I didn't pay the surcharge of the Chomesh, that even though, and that's wrong, meaning the Torah instructs me to also add on a Chomesh, but even though I only paid the Keren, it's considered redeemed. The Chomesh is not Me'akev. It doesn't hold back the redemption, and that's the chiddush of the Mishnah, that Maaser Sheni, that food that was Maaser Sheni, has been now expunged of its Kedushas Maaser Sheni. About Tormas Yavish, now the Gemara talks about Tormas Yavish, dry beans. Now, as I mentioned, the Mishnah here is talking about foods that are inedible either for halachic or just simply inedible reasons. So now this Tormos, it's a funny bean. It comes up a number of times in the Gemara. We talked about the bean earlier in the Masechta. It's a very bitter bean. So the Gemara says, of halach lo. Now it has to be dried because once it's a moist bean, it's not edible. My time it came in the Gemara lo achla. It's so bitter, says the Gemara, that no one's going to eat such a bean. We're now on the top of Kuf Chav Ches Amud Aleph. Avalo is a tevel. The Gemara, the Mishnah says, but if your storehouse is filled with tevel, you have no right to move that because tevel obviously is prohibited. Nobody's allowed to eat tevel. The Gemara wants to know, just again, same question. Pshita, that's so obvious. Meaning tevel is a Isser D'Oraisa. It's biblically forbidden. So, I mean, as much as the Mishnah could have given the example of Tevel, the Mishnah could have talked about Nevela and Trefa and anything which is prohibited to eat. So why speak to Tevel? Lo tzricha b'tevel tavel midrabbanan. The Gemara says, the Chiddush of our Mishnah is that even though its Tevel status is only a derabbanan Tevel. For example, shezar be'atzeh sheino nakov, where I planted in a pot that does not have holes in it. So that means that there's no communication between the dirt in the pot and the dirt in the earth. So therefore, it didn't grow out of the ground of Eretz Yisrael. But if that pot was in Eretz Yisrael, even though it doesn't have holes in it, so it's still going to be chayv midrabbanan in Trumas HaMaisros. And so therefore, it's usher midrabbanan as tevel midrabbanan. And the point is that even though it's an issur derabbanan, so that's a big chiddush. Meaning now what we're learning is that if the prohibition of me eating it is only an issur derabbanan only, I mean, still usher, but it's only an issur derabbanan, that still gives it muksa status. I mean, you could throw around the idea of exer l'exera, but that's the chiddush. The chiddush is no, we don't. It's usher. I can't eat it. Therefore, it's muksa. The Gemara now says, "V'lo ma'aser rishon pshita lo tzricha shekdima b'kri shenotam mimenu ma'aser v'lo not lemimenu truma gedola." So the when the Mishnah talks about ma'aser where truma has not been removed, so we're talking about post production. The Levi took off Trumas Maaser, but he did not take off Truma Gedola. I might have thought that Rav Papa's point that he made earlier in today's daf was a valid point. And the Gemara says, and that's the Chiddush of our Mishnah, that Abaye is correct, that after processing, if the owner gives the Levi first, the Levi has to in turn give both Trumas, Truma Gedola and Trumas Maaser. Now the Mishnah says that if the Maaser Sheni is not been redeemed, so then you can't move it because it's prohibited to eat. Maaser Sheni is not allowed to be eaten outside of Yerushalayim. So what's the chiddush in that? The Gemara says it's redeemed, but not really redeemed. So for example, let's say the Maaser Sheni I redeemed on an Asimon. All right, you all know what Asimon is. Anyone of my age or older, you remember the good old days in Israel. Inserted Asimon into the telephone. It's one of my favorite memories. But Asimon in the Gemara, when the Gemara uses the word Asimon, it just simply means a coin that's not minted. Right, a token. So that, the interesting halacha, that when you redeem, Maaser Sheni has to be on a coin, but a minted coin. There's a halacha in a Torah that has to be a minted coin. And if I only redeem it on a token, a piece of scrap metal, it's not redeemed. It needs minting. Now, in terms of hektish, how was it redeemed but not redeemed? It was redeemed on property. You cannot redeem hektish on property. Hektish can only be redeemed on movable items. Okay, exactly what pasuk is being quoted over here. Take a look at Tosos. Tosos wonders that question, but okay, in the meantime, however, for our purposes, just know that Hektish cannot be redeemed onto property, but Hektish has to be redeemed on movable items. V'lo es haluf. Okay, you ready for a little bit of animal talk and animal food talk? Okay, these upcoming Gemara over here, these are going to be those Gemaras where a lot of terms being thrown around. Not sure exactly what all these things are, but you'll bear with me. We'll get out some basic ideas out of this Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan Metaltan Sechatzav Memneshu Maichal Tzvim Vesechadam Memneshu Maichal Leonim Rabbi Shem Gomer Af Metaltan Shevei Zechuches Memneshu Maichal Lenaamiyot. Okay. Certain things which you and I normally wouldn't consider food. Now, what these things are, chatzav, chardal, shivri zechuchis. So the shivri zechuchis is by far and away the most interesting of these items because that's shards of glass. Okay. Anyway, but the point is that since these, what we would normally consider non-food items or, you know, indigestible food items, but since they can be eaten by certain animals, so therefore it is not Muksa. So Amalei Rabbi Nasan Alameata Chavila Zmoris Yatatanim Mimneshu Maichal Lepilin. So the Gemara says, okay, but if we're going to go down that road, so then Chavila Zmoris, vines, like just simple vines, elephants, part of the diet of an elephant. So if an elephant can eat vines, so can we move vines on Shabbos, arguing that it's elephant food? Rashiman Gamliel will tell you the following. Look, ni'imiyot. Now, na'imiyot, Rashi says, is bat ya'ana. We generally translate that as an ostrich, but we don't know for sure, but if you want to say an ostrich, that's fine. So, since an ostrich, part of its diet, and Aaron, if you want to fact check me, but part of the ostrich's diet, says the Gemara, is glass. Now, this I've told you before, you know, birds eat little pebbles. Right? And because what they do is, they don't have teeth, and they need to digest the food, so what do? So they have the little pebbles that they eat, they put it into their mouth, it goes into the crop, and there, the crop grinds the food using the pebbles. Okay. So the ostrich does basically the same thing, but with shards of glass. Okay. Again, Aliba de Gemara. I'm not the expert on any of this, but the interesting part, however, for us is the following. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, ostriches, you know, people own them, not you and I, but like in other words, very important people own ostriches, but no one owns an elephant. Elephants are totally wild animals. So Amar Amema Vehudis Le Namiot. Now, does that mean that these shards of glass will not have muksa status? Because they could be given to an ostrich? Or no, bedafka, you actually have to own an ostrich. So the Gemara presents first the opinion of a Maimar. You must actually own an ostrich if you want to declare your shards of glass to be non-muksa items. I'm Rav Ashi La Maimar, Allah Dekamar, Le Rav Nassal, Hashem, Gamlil, Chavil, Ismurs, Yatatan, Mimneshu, Maichal, Lepilim. So he is Lepil, Amaylo. So the Gemara says, well, based on your logic, so let's go back to our elephant talk. We were arguing earlier that vine should be non-muksa because it could be given to elephants. And the Gemara says, yeah, but who has an elephant? So the Gemara says, okay, look, if the halacha requires that you own an ostrich in order for the glass to be non-muksa, so let's say the same thing by an elephant. If you own an elephant, I know that's a big if, but logically it's the same point. If you own an elephant, so then the vine should not be muksa. So therefore he says that's not the case. The case is that the shards of glass are not muksa, even if you don't own an ostrich, as long as it's roi. Meaning because the ownership of ostrich is not that out there. Owning an elephant is way out there. No one's going to own an elephant. Now, this takes us to an interesting discussion, which is the following. You and I, I'll speak on behalf of myself. Okay? Simple life, simple house, living very comfortably, but no thought of mine is that I should go and buy an ostrich. Okay, my kids ask me for other things, but not an ostrich. And so I'm not really in the market of buying an ostrich, but what basically we're going to argue now is the following. Look, I'm the son of a king. Okay, we're B'nai Malachim. Okay, sometimes we don't see it that way. We live in the Galus, but we're B'nai Malachim. Huh? The Gemara is going to make that connection. So we're B'nai Malachim. So even though right now I have no thought of owning an ostrich, but princes do. So really, in theory, I should be of the thought, you know, I should be in the market for an ostrich. Not that I'm actually going to buy one, but at least halachically, because I'm a ben melech, because I'm a prince, so therefore an ostrich to me shouldn't be the strangest thing in the world. And because I theoretically could buy an ostrich, and I should be thinking those terms because I'm a ben melech, so therefore the shards of glass are not muksa. Amar Abaye, and you know what Abaye does, because he does this all the time throughout Shas. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva, four Tanayim, Kulu Sriya Luhu, Kol Yisrael B'nei Melachim Heim. These four Tanayim all subscribe to this basic thought process. We're B'nei Melech, we're B'nei Melachim, and so therefore anything enjoyed by a king should be in our purview, meaning totally within our framework. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Hadaman, now Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, look, we should all be thinking about buying an ostrich. Okay, what a strange conclusion from the daf. You walk away from today's daf. What did you learn today in the daf? Let's take a look at ostriches. But in other words, again, the point is not we're gonna do it, but it's not the thought should not be that so far removed. B'nei Malachim buy ostriches. We should be in the market for an ostrich. Rabbi Shimon Denan B'nei Malachim Sachen Agabe Makusem Shemen Vered, the rose oil. Right, we talked about this. Let's say now a month ago, no, less than a month ago. Rose oil, shekein darken shel b'nei melachim asoch b'chol. Since b'nei melachim use rose oil, we use rose oil because we are b'nei melachim. Rabbi Shimon Omer kol yisrael b'nei melachim heim. Rabbi Shmuel v'Rabbi Kiva d'Tanya. Hareisha you know shem bo elef mana v'levush itzal abas kuf mana. Let's say you're in a ton of debt, and you owe 1,000 mana. Okay, a large sum of money. And right now, your creditors are running after you, and they're looking to seize property. And they're looking at your car, and they're looking, okay, in other words, they want to seize. They want their money. And you don't own anything, but you're wearing a nice coat. Really nice coat. Can he seize your coat? And so the Tanakhama is of the opinion, sure he can. Meaning, you don't have to be wearing such nice finery. You go, and you downgrade. And you get yourself a very simple coat. And you sell the nice coat, and whatever the difference is, obviously you pay off your creditor. And Tana Mishum Rabbi Shmuel, Tana Mishum Rabbi Akiva, and here comes Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva, Kol Yisrael Ruim Lo'oso Itzdala. What do you mean? We're B'nai Malachim. I know right now that my financial resources don't allow me to wear such a coat, but I'm a Ben Melech, and a Ben Melech would be wearing such a coat. I therefore should be wearing such a coat. Now, wow, does this get a little touchy? Because essentially, according to Rabbi Shmuel, according to Rabbi Akiva, meaning you can live above your your means, because you're a ben melech, even though you owe a lot of money. In other words, let me throw this out, and I only state this as a question. Rabbi Akiva says that asei shabbas chachol, right? That's Rabbi Akiva. Right? Asei shabbas chachol. You should make your Shabbos a weekday. If you can't afford a nice Shabbos, so don't. Don't. In other words, al tistarach lebrios. Yeah. Okay. I'm also interested in giving answers as well. But like, in other words, I'm trying to figure out Rabbi Akiva. Should you live above your means? Should you live within your means? So, okay. The standard Rishonim don't ask it, but it's certainly a worthwhile investigation. Chavile kash vechavile zmuros. We're back to the Mishnah. We're talking about now soft wood, twigs. I say twigs, by the way, it's softer than twigs because, as it will be apparent in just a moment, your animals can eat it. So it's like it's more like grass than it is wood. Tanur Rabbanan Chavile Kash VeChavile Etzim VeChavile Zradim Imit Kinam LaMaicha Behema Metaltan Osam VeImlav Ein Metaltan Osam. So if I set it aside for animals before Shabbos, so then obviously it's not muksa. Because I'm supposed to feed my animals on Shabbos. But if I didn't set it aside, so then it's muksa. Hashem Gamil Omer Chavil and I tell him the yard, Echad Motel, Tatam Shayadai Master. Now, it depends. If I can handle it with one hand, then fine. But if I need two hands to handle it, then it's not fine. And Rashi explains because two hands, Tirchi is there, meaning that's a lot of work. Asal Tatalan. Chavile Sia, Azov, the cornice. Now, bundles of different vegetation. Azov, I know, is hyssop. The Gemara is going to try to help us understand what these things are. Okay, whatever the case is, whatever they are. So, if I bring him in as firewood, meaning designated as firewood, obviously it's muksa. Now to make a fire on Shabbos, it's a, well, I was going to say klishamach to a lister, but now I know better. It's muksa mach masgufo. And so therefore you can't move it on Shabbos. If, however, I bring it in for the purpose of feeding my animals, so then obviously it's not muksa. V'kotem b'yad v'ochel, and now you can cut it with your hands and snap it with your hands and eat it. Eat it, I guess, means feed it to your animals, but okay. The ovavash lo yiktom b'kli, you cannot cut it with scissors or any utensil. Umolav ochel. Now let's say they're peas in a pod, and I need to remove the peas from the pod. Now that may be a malacha of dash, but if I do it with my hands and not with machinery, so then on Shabbos it would be mutter. Shaloyim lo b'kli harbe, but you cannot do it with a utensil. Oddly enough, the Bryce over here sticks in the word harbe. Right. In other words, if it's with a utensil, it seem like it wouldn't make a difference whether you're doing a lot or a little. Either way, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, that's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, v'chacham emomrim, mol b'roshi etzbi osava, ochel v'vash olim lo b'yado harbe. It has to be a further shinui, meaning rubbing it in your hands is not enough to remove the piece from the pod. You have to only do it with your fingertips. That has to be the shinui which makes it mutter to do on Shabbos. Kederach shu osu b'chol kach, kederach shu osu b'chol. Because during the week you do it with your hand, Shabbos, you have to do a little bit differently. Fingertips. V'chein b'amisei, v'chein b'pigam, v'chein b'shar minei tavlin. And it's true with these other types of vegetations as well. Maya misa, nina. Rashi explains that is mint, right? Nana. Sia, amrav Yehuda, tzasrei. Okay? You have the English, you know better than I do what that is. Ezov, avrasa. Cornis, cornisa. So you see what the Gemara is doing? These things which are mentioned in Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh, which we don't know what they are, so the Gemara translates in Aramaic. Okay, that doesn't help me, but Kornisa Shema. V'ha hu da'amar lehu man bai Kornisa. Now the Gemara says, yeah, but last time I went to the market, somebody was calling out, who wants Kornisa? V'shtake chashe. And I went over there to see what he was selling, and he was selling chashe, which is not what the Gemara described it earlier. Elasia tzasre, so the Gemara redefines. Sia tzasre, whatever that is. Ezov is avrasa, I believe that's hyssop. And cornisa is chashe. Okay, good. Itmar. Basar maliach. And now we get on to the meats. So we've now spoken of vegetations at length, and now we move on to the world of meats. Are meats muksa? Basar maliach mutal atatal b'shabbos. If it's salt and meat, so then you're allowed to move it on Shabbos. Who's going to eat raw salted meat? Yeah, your animals. Your animals will eat raw salted meat. Basar tafel, but if it's unsalted, so Ravuna amar mutal tatala, Chista amar asal tatala. So we have a debate amongst the Amarim. Ravuna amar mutal tatala, v'ha Ravuna tamid derav hava. So the Gemara is bothered by the following. We know Ravuna is a student of Rav. We know Rav k'Rav Yehuda svirale, de islay muksa. That Rav holds like Rav Yehuda, who holds of the concept of muksa. So now I have unsalted meat, no one's eating it, why should you be allowed to move it on Shabbos? Why would, or more specifically, why would Rav Huna allow you to move it on Shabbos? B'muksa la'achila sava lak Rav Yehuda, b'muksa la'talto sava lak Rav Shimon. Gemara gives a fascinating answer. Well, Rav doesn't really hold like Rav Yehuda, Rav actually holds like Rav Shimon. Mm-hmm. Right? And even though you're allowed to move muksa, meaning Rav holds like Rabbi Shimon, but you're not allowed to eat muksa. Now, do I fully understand the difference between moving muksa and eating muksa? Meaning muksa is muksa is muksa, and obviously from this Gemara, that's not true.
Could it be like the other seeds that you give to an animal?
But it's unsalted, so the Gemara is... I don't know. The Gemara is assuming it's not eaten by an animal because had it been edible by an animal, so then it wouldn't be muksa. Okay. Anyway, but an interesting breakup between Rav really holds like Rabbi Shimon, and so therefore you're allowed to move muksa. But even though Rabbi Shimon says you're allowed to move muksa, but Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda in that you're not allowed to eat muksa. Okay, interesting split. Rav Chista Amar Asal Atatol Avar. Rav Yitzchak Bar Ami Yiklo Lebei Rav Chista. The Gemara tells the following story. And Amar went to the house of Rav Chista. Ve'chaza Bar Yivza Da'avikam Atatolei Misham Shalatula. And what did he do? He took a goose and he moved it from the sun to the shade. Ve'amar Rav Chista Chisar and Kiz Kachazinan. Meaning if that goose sits out there in the sun, that goose is going to get cooked. Thank you. I've been preparing all day for that one line.
Yeah. You cannot move it
around. Okay, good. So Shani Bar Yivza Dechazilam. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the goose over here, the goose meat is so tender, so it can be eaten even raw. So in other words, it's not muksa, period. It's food. Now, interesting question, which I thought of, but then I looked at Tosos and I realized Tosos thought about it a short 800 years before I thought about it. How in the world can you eat raw goose meat? What about the blood? And Tosos says, right, third to bottom Tosos from the Amud, Mikan Raya, Didam Ha'ivarim Shalom Pirish Mutter, that if I have blood in the limbs that have not moved, right, this takes us back to our Yoredeya days. Most of those days I've forgotten. But if you have blood of the Avarim that have not moved, so that blood is not prohibited in the Torah. It's only Dam Shapirish. Now, if you don't understand what that fully means, I also don't understand what that fully means, Dam Shapirish versus Dam Shlo Pirish. But in other words, but Tosfos posits, based on our Gemara, that if it is raw meat, and it's only, and you're eating, obviously, the muscle, but it's dam shelo pirish, then that blood would be mutter. Obviously, you already hear it from Tosos, mikan raya. From here, it's a proof. Meaning, this is not a black and white issue, but you can certainly point to our Gemara as being proof for this idea. Back to the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan. Okay, we talked about meat. Now let's talk a little bit about fish. Dag maliach mutter l'tatalo. Now, salted fish, oh, please, that's the best. So that you're allowed to move on Shabbos, meaning that's edible. Dag tafel, also letaltalo. But if it's unsalted fish, raw unsalted fish, like nobody's eating that. So basar bein tafel, bein malech, mutter letaltalo. Now this braisa says that meat, whether it's salted or not salted, you're allowed to move it. Tana rabbana metaltalo, so someone's been made shumachal klovim. What about the bones? I often wonder on Shabbos after. But I like those big marrow bones. So when I finished with the bone, so what's with the bone? So the Gemara over here presents an opinion. Fine. You're allowed to give it to your dog. Now again, we can ask the question, do you have to have a dog? Or huh? No, I assume over here it means your dog. Now, what about uncovered water? Now, right, if you've been with me long enough, you'll know the Gemara abhors uncovered water, meaning that is as dangerous as things can get. The Gemara's concern is that out will come a snake and insert venom into uncovered water, and drinking mayim megulim is tantamount to eating poison. I mean, essentially, it is. It's basically consuming poison. So the Gemara says, what if you have uncovered water? Is that muktza? So the Gemara says, no, because cats enjoy drinking it, and apparently cats have some sort of tolerance for...
Nine lives.
Huh? Yeah, they have nine lives. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel on the Mayim Megulim says, no way. You cannot, in other words, it is so... It's poison. So it's Mimnei Asakana. But what's interesting is that the comes out the coin to Rabbi Shimon, it's poison and it's muksa, meaning because you're not allowed to feed it to anybody, because no one's allowed to drink it, so therefore it's muksa, which then an odd conclusion, meaning now because it's muksa, so now it has to be lying around until after Shabbos. But that's the basic idea. Okay, Ad Khan, we'll stop over here. Alright, today we finished up the Gemara on Bing Dan Lakav's Chos, extraordinarily important inyan. And then we dissected the Mishnah step by step. All the cases in the Mishnah of foods that are mutter versus foods that are asur. And what the Gemara did is teased out a chiddush in every case in the Mishnah. And then we moved on to a larger discussion of raw meats and raw fish, whether or not they are considered muksa or non-muksa items, depending on whether they are edible for either you or for their animal. Okay, continue Rufur Shlema for Binyamin Zevakon Ben Sharon Rivka, and for Rafael Zakai,
Abraham
Ben Yakir Avigail.